Hello everyone, I'm Mark Fox from Grapple Arcade on BBG Wrestling. This is our second episode reviewing NWA Power. So yes, I'm joined today by my brother, apparently. Some would say he is, anyway. Richard Fox. How are you doing, Richard?
No, not too bad.
Good man. Now, we've both had a chat about it in general. We've both had a little bit of crack about it. I know we were both really highly looking forward to NWA coming on the screen from what we'd read about it and from what we knew about it. The people that we'd heard were going to be involved with it. So you were part of the first episode review. Quickly, a very sort of quick summary from your point of view, what you thought of the first episode when it aired and your general views of it.
I think overall, surpasses expectations, really. I think going into something like that, you have that nostalgia factor going into it, but I think it far surpassed anything I thought it was going to be. I'm sure it had been touched upon many times by many people that 2019, not really a place for studio wrestling, or that's what you would have thought anyway, but it shows that there is a place in the market for it, as niche as it may be, although given what the viewing figures have been and the amount of subs that they've got on YouTube now, it seems that it perhaps isn't as niche as we thought. It is, looks like it's going to hopefully continue to do very, very well.
There's been a lot of positive, hasn't it? It's been the sort of general feedback and the general viewpoint of what it is and how it's been presented, including who's in charge as well, because I don't think people really took Billy Corgan that seriously. I think people maybe took him as a fan of wrestling who's got a lot of money. Well, actually, he's not a billionaire like certain wrestling promoters and owners, but he's got a big passion for it. And I think people just thought, oh, it's a fan with a few quid to chuck around. Then everybody saw his involvement, obviously, with TNA Stroke Impact. And he's gone on from there to take over NWA. Apart from people going to the live shows and being able to catch maybe some random video on demand matches and things like that, I don't think people were really exposed to what it was after he took over. And I certainly wasn't. I'll hold my hands up. I was aware that he was involved with NWA. I was aware that there was something going on with NWA, like prior to the YouTube channel starting and prior to the YouTube show starting. But I wasn't really aware of what was going on with it, other than it being maybe a slightly, a quieter territory of its former self. But the build to that first show and people's general views of what to expect from it, and then I was lucky enough to be one of the ones who caught that sort of mini eight minute long prelude, if you like, the pre-show build up, seeing the studio for the first time, seeing Jim Cornette's reaction to seeing the studio for the first time, and seeing how Billy Corgan was rallying the troops, for a term of a better word. I think it was really good to see, and then seeing the show itself the way it was really good fun. And that leads us on nicely to show number two. So going into this one, we had a really fun recap of the main event from the previous week. Firstly, what was your thoughts of that match in general, that Aldis versus Storm match?
I thought the main event and the build-up was really, really good from week one. And just to touch on something that you were saying about Billy Corgan, I was one of the people who thought it was a no-go. I thought that it was just a fad or a hobby for a rock star to take on. Now, fair play, he's a wrestling fan, but he's a wrestling fan with money, so he just takes on a nice little project to keep his passion going. As far as I was concerned, NWA was a completely dead brand and had absolutely no right re-emerging into what it has done, so it's absolutely tremendous what they've done with it. Coming out of week one, they've been able to create some characters already with such little time that you actually are invested in already. You look at Eli Drake and the few minutes he had in his opening promo, absolutely stellar. You couldn't wait to see him again. And with the main event with Nick Aldis and Tim Storm, I can't even remember the last time I got so far behind a babyface, let alone an aged one who previously I'd never seen anything about or really cared to have any sort of vested interest in. I remember reading about him once upon a time winning the NWA title and just reaffirming my belief of it being a completely dead brand.
Yeah.
So to go from that to what they accomplished by the end of week one, or episode one, I thought was a tremendous achievement. It was a babyface that you were desperate to get behind when he landed that low blow on Aldis, and you thought he was going to get the victory. You were well behind him. Aldis kicked out, couldn't believe it. Aldis then clotheslined his valet. You thought, okay, there it is. Now it is all over. He's got rammed him into the ring post. There it is. He's won the title again. You were behind him the whole entire way of it as well. So I think that is old school in ring storytelling, and that's the sort of thing that is going to have people continue watching it week on week. And like I said, take that over into week two now, and they've done the same again. It's a 60-minute show. It's not just a case of being able to make the most of the characters they have. They make the most out of every single minute that they have.
Yeah.
And I think it's tremendous what they've done with it.
There's no dead time.
I couldn't wait for week two.
Absolutely. There's no dead time. It's you're in there. There's nothing over the top. It's just... It's molded nicely. It's an hour long show, and everything that's in there should be in there. There's nothing where you think, I've never come out of it yet thinking, well, they haven't done this, and this. It's just been all molded nicely, and you're getting enough of everything so far. It's going to be interesting to see where they go with a few of the bits and bobs and see how certain things develop. We'll touch on those as we speak through the different elements of the show. So just to... also mention, I think that Cornette, Garley and Marquez, the three announcers, if you want to call them that, include Marquez being the interviewer, stellar work. already I think the three are the best in wrestling right now.
I think Cornette's passion you can never ever question. Yeah. I think it's always been that. I mean, one of my favourite memories of Jim Cornette was his Attitude Era work shoot promos, and he was talking before his disastrous NWA stable angle going into that. Yeah. But you can see that the passion was there anyway. That's why he was given that opportunity to do that in the first place. And that it's just resonated every single time you hear him talk. Anytime he speaks, it's almost like he's cutting a promo. His passion for that old school Southern wrestling is undeniable, and he brings that to the commentary table. Yeah. I think the interview,
David Marquez.
I think that was. I think what he does is he adds such a good dimension onto it.
He's my favourite in the business at the moment. Like everybody who I see, whether it's regardless of which promotion it is, just the way he conducts himself. Well, you know, just that kind of. I don't know, it's his demeanour, it's his, the way he portrays himself. He comes across like he's from the 80s interviewing somebody. He manages to pull that off really well. He's just placid.
It's a nice refreshing change as well to see that you saw back, again, just to not to keep harking on about an attitude or everything, but you saw with interviewers back in those days, it wasn't such a bad thing that they were being made a fool out of a little bit. If they were mocked slightly, they took it, do you know what I mean? They just took it on the chin. They weren't trying to put themselves over while they were doing it.
Yeah.
You see that a lot now. Whereas Marquez, he very much takes it on the chin. He gets part and involved with that little back and forth thing. But when he gets insulted or what have you, he takes it as you're meant to. Mm-hmm. I think Gally's been really, really good as well.
He's been a revelation. He's like, so he reminds me a bit, I don't know if the best way to describe him, maybe he's kind of got a bit, dare I say, a bit of the old sort of early 90s Vinnie Mac about him, with the way he tried to conduct an interview and ask probing questions, and people will, we'll get onto that particular interview if that happened at the end of episode two here, but he's kind of pushing buttons a little bit to kind of get the scoop a bit, but without being over the top. He's doing it in a respectful kind of way, but in a way which is going to annoy heels.
that's it. I think as you say, we'll touch upon it as we go in, but the fact that he was saying about him trying to really paint himself as a real broadcast journalist, he's going to ask those questions and what have you.
It's coming across slightly, it's brilliant. It is. It's ever so slightly unlikable at the same time, put a smirk on your face.
It's a perfect balance of
you could potentially end up being a bit annoying if you keep dropping things like that, which is fine as far as I'm concerned. You know, I like that.
It's another dimension.
It's
a fine mix of him you would imagine that if a staff member were to say that, like, I am a broadcast journalist, in that sort of way, you would think, ah, what a prick.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's doing it as a way to be on a fan's side, to try and get some answers and further along the story, which the fans want to know, which the fans want to find out. So I think that ties into something I was going to be touching upon anyway, was the character work that they're doing. And you see it throughout all of this show in particular. There's no particular, right, this guy is an out-and-out heel, this guy is an out-and-out face. There's such a grey area. It's none of that sort of you one or the other. Everything's a complete personality thing, and you find it so much in this. It's unreal.
It is, and that's going to lead into really interesting times, I think, for fans to decide on who they like. There's a couple, don't get me wrong. I mean, we'll talk, one of the tag teams, for example, the Dawsons, they're out and out heels, of course.
Yeah, and you need
a few of them. But there's a few out and out faces as well, but there's a lot of them which are that crossover appeal. And so then the fans decide. If they've gone down there, we're not going to tell you who to boo or cheer. You can decide, Root. And I think that's the right way to go, because I think it's going to be obvious as time goes on, really, without people being conflicted. I think it's going to be pretty obvious. I think it's going to be fun. But without further ado, we'll check into this, the first outing, if you like, for a character that we hadn't seen last week, made the debut this week, the thespian Aaron Stevens. So obviously he comes out in his full-on Shakespearean monologue style, if you like, and pretty much takes the piss. Everybody around him, don't look into my face.
he was such a good character at one point in his Damien Sandow days. The fella can act, and the fella can, he definitely has a charisma to him.
NWA, his in ring ability as well suits this kind of suits NWA to a T for me. A little bit of technical prowess, but mainly just, you know, that slower paced kind of methodical approach to a match that he has, much like his kind of gimmick in general, is that sort of like he'll walk you through a story. Great.
When he was doing the promo as well, doing that, all that thespian thing, it was when he just took a second, then took a breath, and then just shouted silence to the whole audience. Unbelievable. At that point, I thought, yeah, okay, I'm on board with him. That's cool.
Absolutely. Very looking forward to seeing what develops with him going forward. And then that leads on nicely, actually, to a particular character who I've been banging on about for years as one of my favourites from when I saw him for the first time in a tag team for a different company at the time. And I knew he was with NWA. He wasn't on last week, but let the world introduce Trevor Murdoch. Oh, man, I'm so happy to see Trevor Murdoch back in the ring.
Absolutely made for the NWA. He's what...
he's the NWA, isn't he?
Like, if they could have just said, okay, here's what our stereotypical NWA wrestler's going to be for the YouTube era, he's just right, you know, he's pick number one, surely. Just that whole hard-hit style, it's just a match made in heaven for that promotion.
Something Cornette touched upon as well when he said that Trevor, you know, was so sick and tired of wrestling becoming just boys with attitude, basically. He decided to quit for a few years and almost retired, but he's come back, and as usual, they dropped the reference in several times. It's where real men.
Oh,
men.
if there's one takeaway from that, it's every single one of them on the promos on this episode was all wrestling with boys, but I'm a man. I thought
real
Regal was going to fucking come down at one point.
Real men. Every promo. But yeah, that's that. I mean, well, he was against Ricky Starks, and before we go into the match, Ricky Starks' promo at the end, he dropped the real men. He dropped that in his promo. But the match, it was not what I expected. Not a clash or anything like that, but two different styles going at it, which worked, obviously. It was a fun match to watch. But I didn't expect Starks to get the win over Murdoch. I was kind of taken aback by that a little bit. I thought, seeing Murdoch there, he might be, obviously not. The one thing I want to point out here is that I, as well as yourself and Chris and everybody else who's going to be part of this, are going into this purely based on what we are watching in that 1 hour show. We're not reading anything from behind the scenes. We're not reading any spoilers leading into this. We're watching it on YouTube and then reviewing it as we've seen it. So I don't know what plans have with Trevor, but I was expecting him to potentially go over in this one with the idea of him being a competitor, if you like, for a title.
And keep in mind as well from that, like I was saying, this NWA channel now is absolutely blown. The audience that they've got now is far surpassed what they previously had. So a lot of people aren't going to come into this with any sort of background knowledge either, in the way of, okay, who was this guy in terms of a babyface? Who is this guy in terms of a heel? Where is he on the card? Should he be demolishing him, what have you? As you say, we only getting it from week one to week two. We've only really now seen 2 hours of NWA. Well, predominantly a lot of us have anyway. So you're right, to come from Trevor Murdoch, who was previous WWE superstar, to go against Ricky Starks, who you know, okay, he's a flashy cruiserweight. You know, we've all seen our late 90s WCW to know how well they fare.
So well, to be fair, Ricky Starks is the perfect cutter mold for what Jim Cornette was saying about why Trevor Murdoch was stopped wrestling.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
This young upstart kid's coming about, and his first match in NWA is against a young upstart kid who's full of himself.
I think these sort of matches as well, you know, it's a bit cliche to say, but these sort of matches tell their own story. It's a big guy against a little guy. You don't need any build up to this. You know, the story tells itself in the ring. The size difference in itself. And I think they did well.
It was fun. Good
luck. Yeah, it was. I liked the finish as well, the crucifix end, and the farm was really good.
It was indeed. And I thought Ricky Starks, again, you know, yet again, another pretty solid promo at the end there. Gets over the picture straight away. He's cocky, he's arrogant, he's full of himself. Took the piss out of Marquez, out of the cameraman at one point. Thinks he's God's gift. It gets, you know, just a quick sort of 30-second promo. Got the message off. We know what to take away from that, and I like that.
I think there's a couple of nods to the old Jesse Ventura, Billy Grandpa promos. Rhyming mechanisms that he does throughout, you know, keeping it light, bigging himself up and what have you. I may look funny, but I'm counting your money, sort of thing that he said to us. It was well good. And the few things I was reading as people comparing The Rock and what have you with those sort of promos, I wouldn't have gone that far. I think it was more of a nod to the old Territory Day promos of, like I say, of the Ventura, Billy Graham sort of ones. I wouldn't have gone as far as to say The Rock, but I think he did really, really well with it. And again, I think this is another example of someone who, is he a heel, is he a face? I don't think it's either. I think it's just purely personality. He gave that nod back to Murdoch after Murdoch shook his hand and said he was better on the night. He showed that sign of respect back to Murdoch. At the same time, he said to the interviewer that, yeah, he's a good guy, he loves him too, and all that sort of that. He's got time for him, while at the same time completely rinsing him about his looks.
So, yeah, I can kind of see why there's maybe a slight element of a nod to The Rock with that, but maybe really early Nation Rock. You know what I mean? That kind of... The arrogant side of The Rock rather.
I think The Rock once pointed out a cameraman while doing a promo, but outside of that, I don't think he was trying to do that though. At the same time, like I say, I think he was trying to keep it a lot more old school than what it was. I can understand why people were doing the comparison. I just didn't see it myself.
Fair play. Moving on nicely to the title of the show, which I thought was great. They called the show Clickbait, based on the drop of the word, if you like, from Aldis the week before when he said to Tagali, you know, you can save your clickbait kind of thing during that promo at the end of the show. So they recapped that because that was, you know, the build up to what is going to be the interview at the end of the show where the carrot dangled that Camille might eventually talk. We're 1.5 episodes in and everybody's dying for her to talk.
I mean, again, if that's not like good character development, I don't know what
it is. It's amazing, I know.
She's already playing China better than China did.
Then we had Colt Cabana. The show is just... Colt Cabana comes out looking proper chuffed. He looks really happy. He looks like, I'm home, I'm going to have a class time, I'm going to have a laugh. Mr. Anderson comes out in his usual garb.
I popped my hell when this happened. I knew it was happening. He was already in the opening...
I missed that
the opening title sequence. It shows you who's on that week. So they sort of gave it away. inadvertently, I think. So I knew he was coming out, I knew he was going to be on, but I popped. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
I thought it was a class. I thought the promo was great, but I thought the way Cabana said Cabana at the end rather than Anderson, right at the end before they get in the ring.
He pissed himself while he was saying it as well.
And then we had just looked at him and said, "Why you?" And I thought, "Oh, that could lead to some sort of shenanigans in the ring between them both, where they fall out, and you know."
To keep consistency in this, in what they're doing as well, I think again that just shows more wrestler as personality as opposed to wrestler heel or wrestler face. They were possibly in this situation two mates. Cabana pissed Anderson off. But it doesn't matter because he's still mates, so you know, it's at the end of the world. And you can see, I mean, even in the tag match, the finish to that tag match as well was
brilliant,
absolutely cracking double team finish. I thought,
all credit to Sal Renaro and Jordan Kingsley there. I mean, I love the fact that they're using jobbers for squashers, like, and you know, enhancement talent, whatever.
Renaro looked like an absolute jobber, man.
I loved it. He was wearing Jeff Hardy's original sort of, you know, when Jeff Hardy sort of debuted in those. Like psychedelic green and checkered, whatever they were.
I think that was pre Michael Hayes as well, though, wasn't it? When they were wearing all that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like Kingsley. Really, I thought Kingsley looked pretty good.
I think they're both gonna. I was watching them both because what I couldn't help but do, especially from the previous week as well, is watch the squash matches and try and take in as much as I can from the enhancement guys, because I really like watching them to see, it sounds pathetic, but I really like watching them to see how they take the stars' moves, if you like. It's, I know it sounds arsey, but I really want to know why they've been chosen as enhancement talent. That's, I can't help but think that kind of way, because I bloody love people, you know, old schoolers like Jim Powers and people of that kind of colour, you know, Mike Sharp, people like that. So I'm always intrigued by those kind of characters, and they were really, really good, and I hope that they get the recognition that they deserve as well, because it wasn't just a go in there, get battered, look rubbish, get pinned. They put on a really good match for a squash.
They did absolutely, and I think as well, what you were touching on there, it's nice to see someone doing the job to such a degree where, sort of to touch upon what you were saying there, where their role is to put their opponent over.
And as soon as you see those guys in the ring, as soon as you see those two guys as the opposition, you know how it's going to go. You know it's going to be a squash match, right?
And the thing is as well,
you love it either way.
Not only are they getting squashed, they're getting squashed by what is going to be an effect, by the looks of it, in that match anyway, a comedy tag team.
Yeah.
So it's the equivalent of, I mean, back in the day, of some jobbers losing at the Bushwhackers, you know what I mean? It's the worst sort of job that you know what I mean? Like, you're not getting battered by like the Dawsons, you know what I mean? It were just big, hard, mean gits who were going to absolutely pestle you. The job into what was essentially Cole Cabana, who was running around clapping his hands with his tongue hanging out, smiling, and Mr. Anderson, who looked like he'd had about 10 pints before he went out there with his beer belly and what have you, and just, you know, this was like a comedy team.
Yeah.
This is the Callahan Death Machine in the Draw, and the face of Impact Wrestling, Sammy Callahan, and you're listening to Broken But Glorious.
So moving on to Eddie Kingston, clearly absolutely loving it at the moment. His promos are on fire, are they not?
Yeah, they are. He comes in with this fire inside of him. It's really nice to see. I liked his stuff in Impact, to be fair. I think he did really, really well with the stuff he had there. I mean, it's another example as well of, he's not a heel, he's not a face. Well, he is a face because the crowd are behind him. But when you tell the interviewer to shut up, nobody wants to hear what they have to say, ... with all due respect. So it's sort of like he is a heel, the way he's talking there, but then he brings it back because he is a nice guy. He's just got this underlying fire in his belly. He's got this sort of passion, and that's what NWA are doing really, really well. And like I said it a couple of times already, just this personality that they're bringing out in their guys, and that's shining through and giving them their alignment, as opposed to you're a good guy, you're a bad guy. And I think it's working really, really well with Kingston and Homicide there.
Well, that's what's good about that, because that leads on nicely to the whole... it's that nice, just short promo, really excitable, very on fire, looking for... Now, it gets me ready. I'm really interested in seeing them at the end of the night.
Yeah, it does the job.
Next, we've got, I think it's the first, well, the only women's match of the night, actually. It's Alison Kay, the champion, against Ashley Vox. Good back and forth match, I thought, this year, you know, because considering that Alison Kay is, what, about half a foot taller, and she's like clearly, she's a, you know, a prime sort of a big, huge, tall, sort of well built machine, basically, you know what I mean? She looks like she's going to dominate the division potentially, depending on who else they bring in, because it's difficult to know at the moment with it all being very fresh and new. But she looks like a really, like, a valid champion, if that makes sense.
I think the fact that she presents herself in such a way where she's clearly got character, she's clearly got personality, she's clearly got charisma, she can clearly buy from what I've seen so far of her, now, fair enough, it's only in that one match, but she can clearly carry herself in the ring as well, in terms of being like a bigger woman, a bigger athlete, well, in comparison to Vox anyway. She seems to have the whole deal going on, and in terms of debut and personality of people who haven't been previous stars in bigger promotions or whatever, she was probably the first one I've seen so far that I've instantly grabbed my attention, not because of the previous name value or anything. Like, I hadn't seen anything of Alison Kay before.
Likewise, yeah, likewise. Like, coming out of and it was well. Very refreshing.
Yeah,
refreshing
yeah.
to see. That finishing move as well, it was like some kind of reverse back tombstone. Well, I don't even know what
it was. Yeah, it was like one of those. I remember something similar. I think it was for a weird reference on Beyond the Mat. I think there was a when the two jobbers were having their tryout match. I think it was Michael Modest and then the other guy. That was one of the moves that they cracked out, or something very, very similar anyway.
And Jim Cornette was that?
Jim Cornette almost shit himself of how excited he was by seeing the move. I'm sure it was something similar.
I've never seen that before.
I've
never seen that one before.
Yeah. I'm sure that was a similar type of move, like that sort of like a chronic crusher sort of move, I think. But yeah, it was really good. And I think she carried herself well.
I thought it was a good match, and I like the fact it was back and forth as well. When you see somebody, you know, the sort of size and the sort of dominating presence that Alison Kay had, especially again, like you said yourself, against a smaller competitor like Ashley Vox, neither of them I was personally aware of before going into watching this. I assumed it was going to be maybe more of a squash, but it wasn't. It was a good back and forth, and it really demonstrated what, if they go forward, with the division a similar kind of way that they have, you know, shown within this match, then there should be hopefully some really good things to come, which is great, completely welcomed. Moving on nicely to James Storm coming out and cutting a scathing promo.
He's one of the weirdest promos I've heard.
I've never ever heard somebody come out and take the piss out of their own title before, to the extent.
I mean, like, to the point where he was saying he literally said it was a prop.
He said it was a prop. He said
he was introduced as the
national title. He's the national champion. He was introduced as the national champion. You know, Garley went out of his way again to say, "How are you doing, champ?" To the pack where James just said, "I see this is nothing more than a prop to me."
Yeah.
And I just thought, how to diminish? Like, it's so strange
because in one sentence, he tried to put the title over as being his ticket to the main title, so it was important, but at the same time, absolutely diminishing any value we could have possibly had.
I'll be honest, it didn't work. It didn't work for me, and I think it's the only one negative. I really like his attitude that he brings to a promo. I'm really glad we're getting to see that side of him, that sort of more like a real sort of cowboy from hell style kind of gimmick, you know what I mean?
Well, as you well know, he's a man who lifts hair and drinks beer and then goes to church, so, you know,
and
I believe his words were, "I'm the sort of guy who drinks beer and does all this because I'm that sort of man," or something like that. And he had absolutely no reason behind what he was saying whatsoever. He was just on
the way he delivered
it. Yeah, exactly. But then the way he did it was so much conviction. You're like, "Yeah, all right, I'm on board with this. Go on, James, lad." I'm a man as well because I'm that guy too. It was so bizarre. And then when Eli Drake came out again,
kind of saved it for me. I think
it did, but it comes away from it. I, It was so confusing.
What did Drake come out for? I couldn't work out. Was there some kind of subtle challenge in there that I missed? Or
I didn't know if it was stirring the pot with Nick Aldis to say, oh, he's evading you, he's evading me, and he's evading you again. And then he said...
It was a bit of a shoehorn in for Drake, I don't know why. Yeah.
It was that sort of thing, if you go for the title, if you win or you lose or you draw, remember me. I have no idea what... It was basically, okay, like Drake here as well, let's get him on the show and let's move it along, just put him in the main event picture.
Yeah, both
I understand what it was they were trying to do. They just don't think they did it that.
It didn't work for me, that one.
Overall, out of the whole show, it was probably the most underwhelming thing on the show.
Yeah, I agree with that. Moving on to the actual, one of the best things in wrestling at the moment, the advert for Austin Idol's wrestling skills. this is sublime.
Seconded only to Tony Fox's waffles and tie irons.
I forgot if I mentioned that earlier on the show. Yeah, that was next level stuff.
And the gold as well.
They're brilliant. They're like
gold tie irons.
Oh god! Yeah. Oh, I thought you were about the promos. They were gold, but they were. They were great. And more of that, please. More of that, please, Billy. Tag title match, Wild Cards versus Kingston Homicide. Now, I'm impressed by both teams. I mean, this was always going to be two big hoss kind of brute nuts fighting each other. It was never going to be about technical prowess, this one. It was always going to be about a bit of smash mouth stuff going on here. And it was great fun for what it was. I thought the running from Dawson's made sense. You want to keep the belt on Wild Cards for now. You don't want Kingston Homicide to lose clean on their debut match. And you want the Dawsons to still look strong because they're a real threat to the sort of scene. And I thought I was happy with what the match was. It was just big lads slapping each other about for a few minutes. It was good.
I'll be honest. It had only been almost two shows heading into this one. But because we've had so many clean finishes at this point, going into this tag match, I was actually wondering, okay, Kingston Homicide, are they actually going to win straight away? Surely the Wild Cards aren't going to drop the titles by show two. So I never even thought that there was going to be this sort of finish to it. So I got completely worked into it because when the Dawsons came in and created that interference finish, I was foaming because I wanted to see a clean finish. We'd already had so many clean finishes from week one and week two. That I completely forgot that this was something that was going to be that could even happen.
There was a thing
that it could be a thing. So when they came down, and it's funny that you say that these big lads came down and just pezzled them. And earlier on, that you said that they were proper heels as well. Because literally, my last line on the note of this match was Dawson's interfered. They are big lads and actual proper heels. They just came in and pezzled the living piss out of everybody.
Yeah.
But this was after Kingston dropped the F bomb, which was tremendous.
Yep. Yeah, he did. He'll probably get called up on that one. I don't know. We'll see how that one goes. Fun match, though. Fun scrap. I think the tag division's going to be an interesting one. I'm looking forward to it. It's at the moment, it's all very brute nut, smash mouth, smashing each other about style teams. It's going to be interesting to see how that tag division develops.
I think we've come across four teams so far now, haven't we? With the Wild Cards, Kingston, Homicide, the Dawsons, and now Cabana and Anderson. If they're going to be a regular team anyway, which by the looks of it, they probably will. I'd like to see that as well.
I think at the moment, until they go, we're on episode two, so how can we start talking about the different divisions establishing themselves yet? Obviously, they're creating that, and we're getting somewhere, and we can foresee where things are going a little bit. But the tag division is looking very promising. The tag division so far is sort of standing out more for me at the moment because of the amount of teams that we've seen in it who are all on a par with each other, if you like.
And I think keep in mind as well, there probably will be guys who are listening to this who have known NWA before. What I've seen so far is like, oh, what about Team XYZ, Team da da da. From me talking on the show now, this is purely from week one and week two with the entertainment and the shows that's being presented to us from point one, from show one to show two. So we have only come across four teams. I'm sure more will be introduced from the earlier numbered NWA shows that haven't been on YouTube, that haven't been part of Power. But as it stands now, it still already looks like it could be quite strong, and you don't know which one is actually the superior team thus far. They are, like what you said, all on level foot, and then they all could get a win from anyone.
Indeed, indeed. And to finish off, well, firstly, I want to say thanks for Chris to for hosting tonight's event. Even though he's not here verbally, he's here in spirit. He's actually currently watching episode 2 of NWA as we speak, hence why I couldn't take part in the discussion.
So we've just spoiled the whole entire thing for him.
Yeah, he has to edit this afterwards, which is great. So that's why he's squeezing the actual show in now. Garley interviewing Aldous and Camille. NWA dangling the carrot that Camille is eventually, after all of this time, after 2 hours worth of TV spread over 2 weeks, after all of this time of us all waiting, she's eventually going to break her silence and speak.
But what did she have to say?
She did, but who knows? Garley's really fishing for some answers 2 weeks in. Why are you speaking yet? And Aldous is doing his best to shut her up. Camille at one point tapped the mic on a lapel mic just to say, yeah, it works. I'm not saying a thing there. I'm keeping stum.
I know it's not going to go down this line because I don't think it would. But coming out of week one and heading into week two, I was thinking, surely they aren't going to play like some sort of abusive relationship storyline or anything. I can't go into it, Eddie. And obviously, that, like, coming out of this now, that's clearly not the case. But because you know that it's not going to be that now, it then begs the question, so what the hell is it then? What is it then if it's not that? Why isn't she talking?
She might break out one of those voice machine things. I am Camille. I can't. And he started talking eventually.
I am a monster.
After 2 weeks of Michael Cole prodding, speak for God's sake, speak. But
if anyone can get it out of her, I'm sure it's the real broadcast journalist, to be fair.
Well, on that note, we'll wrap it up nicely, and I'll say thank you very much for joining us tonight, Mr. Fox.
Thank you very much, and Nick Aldis will always be my champion.
Oh, well, there we go. That's going to be an interesting one to see how we go forward with that. But please tune in to us next week, everybody. Obviously, we've got the website up and running now at bbgwrestling.com. You can check us out at Grapple Arcade on Twitter, at bbgwpod on Twitter, at BBG Wrestling on Twitter, and at Turnchuckle on Instagram. Richard, do you want to drop any links for people to check some of your wares out? Because I know you're a bit of an avid gamer. Anything you want to plug?
Absolutely nothing in the pipe work at the moment, but I'll be sure to use this as my platform going forward.
Classic. Right. Thanks very much for joining us, mate, and we'll catch up with you soon. All the best, everybody.